Hello and welcome to another episode of the IAAF Inside Athletic Podcast. I'm Ben Harlow and today I'm joined again by Spiked editor Michelle Sammet.
Hello.
And you may know him from Twitter, Statman John.
Hello.
He's also the web editor for the IAAF too, but we did let him into the podcast.
But he doesn't have a real name. His real name is Statman John.
First name Statman, Statman, surname John.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Christened Statman.
Used to be Stat Baby.
Stat Boy.
Oh, okay, I see. Nice progression. Okay, so coming up on this week's podcast, we're going to be talking about the Athlete of the Year nominees because we've got the awards coming up. We're going to touch on fantastic Youth Olympic Games and talk a bit about some of the marathons that have been going on around the world. Because we do have Statman John here with us, we're going to do a little game later on called Beat the Statman, where Michelle is going to try and take on the Stat Lord of Athletics, John McKean. First of all, I want to talk to you. We are in Monaco right now, so I thought we may as well start with the IAAF Awards, which will be here in Monaco in just over a month's time. So, we did the women's nominees first. What do you guys think?
Well, both of the lists, I think, are so hard to call. Mm-hmm. I think going into the year, we weren't quite sure because, obviously, it's a non-championship year and so forth, but we've had such amazing performances all around all of the event groups, which again is really good to see. I'm glad that I don't have to make any decisions. We've talked about in the past, we did a feature on Spikes a few years ago, how the short list or the long list of nominees actually comes together, because a lot of people don't quite understand it. It's a really meticulous process. There's a whole bunch of statisticians in there, not Statman John actually,
but
a lot of others, and they really look at every performance
from all the areas as well.
All the areas, they make sure that we don't forget about any of the event groups. They have a real matrix where they look at all the kind of titles and so forth. You know, I'm a fan of matrixes. and I think seeing how the long list has turned out just shows what a depth in strength we've had this year.
Particularly the women, I thought, was a really diverse group of people in terms of events, nationality. And it really impressive as well. I think the women's, more so than the men's, is wide open.
Really open, yeah. In previous years, sometimes you can kind of narrow it down to two or three and you think, right, there's two or three really outstanding contenders here. But this year, it's so hard to call.
Yeah. Would you say, okay, so if you were to stick your neck out for the women,
I've stuck my neck out in the past. By now I'm headless.
I think for me, I'll go first. I think for me, my athlete of the year it is so tight, but I really, really love Shaunae. I really would love to see Shaunae Miliwebo get an award this year, just because she has been fantastic. That sub-49 performance in Monaco was just outstanding, along with that, her Commonwealth title as well, and just smashing the Diamond League circuit in general. Like, the 200 metres isn't even her real event. Like, she kind of does it just for a bit of fun. And also, I was going to say, I was looking at her athlete profile. She's been doing all sorts of events this year, and she's undefeated in the shot put, in the high jump, in the long jump. She has won every single event she's done, even though it's not the 400 metres. So I think, I don't know, she's got to be one of my favourites. Mm. What about you, John?
It all depends on how you measure it. I mean, if you put a lot of weight on wins, then obviously someone like Shaunae, who's been undefeated throughout the year, she's a great contender. But then you could look at Katarina Barguen doubling up at the Diamond League final, Continental Cup, the area champs as well, winning both events. I mean, she might not have jumped as far as she has done, you know, in the triple jump at her main event compared to previous years, but to pull off those doubles.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic as well. But then also, if you put more weight on record-breaking performances. Beatrice Chepkovich to smash that world record.
True.
And
she's,
then
the only
win
world
other,
record on the women's side this year.
Believe so, yeah. Outdoors.
Maria Lasitskene. I think she's just, for me, she's just so consistent. Mm-hmm. And you look at her indoor performances, you look at outdoor performances. I think the high jump's one of those where we see the athletes really compete very regularly because they have a lot of meet outside of the major kind of diamond leagues and so forth. And she's just so consistent. And I just think that that's... Last year there was the whole discussion of whether she had maybe kind of slipped the net a bit and was robbed of the award. But I genuinely still think she's such a strong contender because she is so dominant in the event.
And also what I think is exciting as well is how the award is selected. So we go 25% on the social media vote, 25% IAAF family vote, and then 50% council vote. So having the social media vote is interesting to see. So the social media vote has been active for a few days now, and it's interesting to see who's pulling out in front and who's popular and who's not.
But looking at the last 2 years where we've had the social media votes as well, sometimes there were people who weren't doing too well early on and then suddenly they really rallied through. And I think that's such an interesting thing, seeing the progress where sometimes people are just a bit slow on the uptake, where suddenly national news outlets discover, oh, one of our athletes is nominated, especially smaller nations where you not necessarily think that they would rally as much. They tend to do better than some of the larger nations. For example, Americans often, we've got two men in there.
Two sprinters, which kind of...
They are competing with each other. And I think that's something really exciting. But as you said, it's only 25% of the overall decision.
I think it is nice, though, that with the award, it feels like everybody kind of gets a say in it, which is, you know...
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway... After the women, let's talk about the men. So for the men, I think it's a bit more clear-cut. Everybody on the list is obviously really deserving, but I think there's a couple of standouts on there.
I think it's clear-cut to, you know, when you're narrowing it down to, say, three, four, five contenders.
Yeah.
Already a lot of people talking about Kipchoge, Kevin Mayer, and Abdurrahman Samba.
Mondo.
Mondo as well. But, I mean, it's a funny one this year because... Obviously, there's the Rising Star Award.
He's got to be a shoo-in for they've not been announced yet, the nominees for it, but surely.
But then you could look at someone like Jakob Ingebrigtsen and you think both of those, they've already done enough to, you know, possibly justify nomination as a senior.
Mm-hmm.
So where does that leave them for the Rising Star?
Well, that's actually, if you look at the European Athletics Awards, you have both of them in the shortlist for the Rising Star and for the Senior Award.
Oh,
and I think that really shows how accomplished they are despite their young age.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was, if you're talking about Mondo, who, again, I mean, how many World Under 20 record has he set?
About 57,000 this year.
But for him to win that European title, to jump the height that he has, the second highest outdoors behind Sergei Bubka. Last year he was here, and for me he seemed like such a shy...
He's grown into a man this year.
He really has. And so he fully deserves to be on that list of senior athletes because he's just evolved so much. He was already outstanding last year, but this year's just stepped up the game. So for me, he's too big for the Rising Star.
And that competition, that pole vault in Berlin was the best athletics competition I've ever seen.
It's insane.
I was commentating on it. I was on my feet. The guys next to me were laughing because I couldn't sit down.
Yeah, it was an incredible night. But yeah, obviously you said there is the three world record holders at Breakers this year. Christian Coleman is overlooked, but he did break the world record in the 60 metres. He had to do it twice because the first one wasn't ratified. But yeah, he still did it all the same. And then, okay, maybe he did dip a little bit mid-season, but he came back with a bang in Brussels, and I think that's still fresh on people's minds.
Yeah.
Maybe can't be overlooked as well to make that top five.
I think that's one of the problems, is the fact that he set that record so early in the year that now we've got the two really late records, which we're not used to. We normally see a world record kind of in the middle of the season. Do you have two in September?
Late
with Kevin
September,
Mayer,
which is weird.
And Eliud Kipchoge. I think that's why people are forgetting about it. But yes, we've had three senior world records there. And I think, as you said, given that this year, for the first time as well, we've got five finalists rather than three. Those three should be a shoe-in, really.
Yeah, definitely. aside from the male and female athlete of the year, we've got rising star for both men and women. We've got coach of the year, woman of the year, performance of the year, photo of the year, and the president's award. So yeah, really excited for that. And when we come back to you next month, I'm sure we'll have all the nominees, and we'll be really excited at that point because it'll only be a week to go till the awards. So yeah, lots of awards hype in the next episode. Moving on though, there's been a lot of athletics. I know we're nearly in November, there's still been loads of athletics going on. So we've had the Youth Olympic Games and some big major marathons happening. So let's do Youth Olympics first. A bit different to what maybe people were expecting, and it's a bit like, it's strange how long the season has gone on for some of these athletes, but it was cool to see some of the World Under 20 champions like Jordan Diaz from Tampere still going into Buenos Aires, and Nacheva, the Bulgarian, also in the triple jump. She had another competition with Maria Vicente, and I think they both faced off in Gyor, didn't they?
They did at the European Under-18s. Yeah. They've been going all season.
Literally, all the way to October. So, yeah, it's been crazy. What did you guys make of the Youth Olympics?
Well, I think what I liked about it is, and that was looking at a lot of the promo, me being German, I follow the German team along quite a bit, and I've got family who is on the team manager side, obviously.
Name dropping, Michelle.
but I think what I liked about it was the fact that they highlighted it isn't just about the competition there. A lot of it is gaining international experience, understanding how these big championships work, how teams work, how you have to adjust around each other, how travel works, how call rooms work, and all of that. And so, yes, we had some absolutely fantastic performances, and there were games records and stuff all around. The thing that I really liked was that a lot of teams brought along still fairly young but senior athletes to help guide these athletes through. And we've seen Yulia Levchenko out there for the Ukraine. We've seen Gina Lückenkämper for Germany out there. And they were not just at the athletics but at all the sports. Mm-hmm. And really enjoying having a multi-sport competition and supporting each other, taking it seriously, but also just enjoying the fact that, as you said, it's late in the season and you're just having a ball out there and you're making friends that you'll probably be seeing along the circuit for the next 5-10 years, because these will be the people that you'll be competing against at Diamond Leagues once you actually reach that stage.
Yeah. John, what do you think?
I thought it was great to see cross country back. And it's interesting that, you know, the athletes who won individual events on the track, they went on to win the cross country as well. And you kind of look back at some of the current greats, you know, Bekele in his early career, the De Barber sisters, they were all proficient at both cross country and on the track. So you kind of look at these athletes coming through now and you kind of wonder, will they go on to match the same kind of achievements? And it wasn't just Kenya and Ethiopia, it was Sarah Chilangat from Uganda, I believe, mm-hmm. who won on the women's side. There was a lot of talk about the formats and some of the innovations at the Youth Olympic Games, and some of it can get a bit confusing, but I think if you are going to test out these things, then this is possibly the right kind of level to do it at. Hopefully they'll go away and kind of think of ways that they can continue to really hone the format and make it hopefully a bit more understandable for future editions.
And friendlier for the athletes.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
And yeah, I think, as you said, the addition of newer events like cross country in it is a fantastic innovation. But is it wrong to say that I enjoyed watching the breakdancing more than the athletics? I just thought it was so cool seeing that in there. Maybe not for a senior Olympic Games, but just as a youth Olympic Games thing. And the climbing made its debut, which will actually be in Tokyo. And that was really exciting too, watching people zip up to the top of the thing. Anyway, moving on from youth Olympic Games, because I'll get carried away talking about breakdancing.
You're too old for that, Ben. You're young, you're not that young.
I just want to break down.
Go on, show us your mate.
I want to talk briefly about the Chicago Marathon. Off the back of Eliud Kipchoge in Berlin, I don't know whether anything can quite live up to that.
No.
But interesting seeing Mo Farah properly give the marathon a good go. And he did actually go on to win in Chicago. And a lot of people said that it was really difficult conditions in Chicago. And, well, you know,
I think it was pretty cold, wasn't it?
It was quite cold and there was not a lot of people around. I don't know.
And that's one thing that I do always wonder. What I find amazing about Berlin, sorry if I move back there, but compared to for the likes of London, of Boston, Berlin doesn't have that much of a crowd. It's a fairly quiet marathon. There's certain parts where it is busy, but a lot of times on the course, it's actually pretty quiet.
Oh.
And that's why I find it so impressive, seeing like year in, year out, the results that we're getting from Berlin. I mean, the course is great, but in terms of atmosphere, Boston and London are just unrivaled. And I think it's a very interesting thing. I think it might be something that for the elites, it's not as big of a deal because it's more of a thing for mass runners.
Yeah.
Because if you're running at that speed that they're going, you might not be taking it in as much as when you take 4 hours to run a marathon. but it does make a difference. And as you said, I for credit to Mo for really pushing himself and running the race that he did and showing to people, yes, I am transitioning well from the track to the roads.
Yeah, and he said he's not ruled out competing in the marathon at the World Champs in Doha. But
well, there's even been talk that he might even go back to the track.
Yeah, I did see that, and I was like, is that actually happening? So London was his last, but Doha
like
will
Kim
be his
Collins
last.
8 years in a row, I think.
Yeah,
was
Kim Collins has been pranking us for years with his retirement.
I bet he's going to come out in the indoor season.
He's going to move it to the marathon next year.
It's all making sense now. Yeah. This year is a transition race.
Oh, God. Okay. And then, so also coming up, we've got the New York Marathon, which is always exciting. We saw last year with Shalane Flanagan and just that iconic run into the finish. Do you think we'll see anything exciting like that? Like that again.
Jeffrey Cumbrough just lining up again. Just such a dominant racer on all terrains, really.
Yeah.
Cross country,
he won the
world
half marathon.
Trains obviously with Eliud Kipchoge, probably elated by his success in Berlin. Loves the streets of New York. Has said that because of the way it runs with all the bridges and the way that you have different climbs and so forth, it really reminds him of training in Kenya.
And it suits the kind of athlete he is. He's not one of these athletes who simply chases records. He's a proper racer. You know, he'll take on Mo Farah on the track. He'll get to out on the cross country circuit. And so, New York, it's not known as being a fast course. It's more for real racing.
He's got grit. I think that's the best way to describe him. He's one of those people who can really grind it out. Mm. Like Eliud Kipchoge makes it look easy. He's graceful. He looks super. Whereas Cumbrough is just for me someone who can back it up. Yeah, really is. But he's so softly spoken and he's just really calm. So he's got this two
Jekyll
personalities,
and
really. And I think that's why he's such a good racer.
I'm sure a few athletes can probably relate to that. Now, away from all the athletics news going on right now, as you can probably tell from the title of the podcast, this episode also contains a sit-down interview with Adam Jamili. This was recorded way back in the summer after the European Championships in Berlin. We actually sat down just before the Birmingham Diamond League. He was a little bit tired, it's safe to say, because I think Berlin was probably quite a draining championships for everyone. But yeah, it didn't stop him from giving a fantastic interview, and he is just a really, really lovely guy. So I hope you guys enjoy it.
Yeah, last season, so after Rio, changed my coach, and then went to see a couple of different coaches, went to Holland, really liked it, got on with Reina really well. Mm-hmm. So last season was my first season, this is my second season. So
interesting.
Yeah.
It's a big decision for athletes having to make that move.
Massive decision.
Because obviously your family is in the UK.
Everyone. Your friends, your girlfriend, like your family. You're leaving everything behind, moving to a completely new different country on a hope that you can improve your performance. And, it's a big risk.
Have you dealt with being away from everybody?
Yeah, I've actually dealt pretty well. I've always been pretty okay with being alone or like being quite independent. I can do things for myself. I've been doing things for myself, but it's obviously tough. FaceTime comes in handy a lot. It's FaceTime and Skype, and you have to always have that communication with your friends at home as well. Otherwise, one or two, 3 days start racking up where you don't speak to anyone from back home, and then that starts to get hard. So, but it's actually pretty good. I'm there for a job, I'm there for a reason, so I'm committed to that, and I'll give it my best shot while I'm out there.
And how often do you go back to the UK?
Not that often. When I'm in season, I try not to travel too much unless I've got something specific I need to be back for an event or for a certain thing. So not actually that often. I'd say once every couple of months, maybe I get home. Wow. So that's if I'm coming home in the winter season, less than that really. So it's tough. It is tough for sure.
And what do you do with your girlfriend? Does your girlfriend come out?
She does. She used to live with me. She got a job in London now, but...
Oh, she used to live in Holland?
She moved for a couple of months, and then she got a job back in the UK, so she started working back in the UK, but just manage it. It's distance. We've been together 4 years now, so we have always had distance in our relationship, so it's nothing new for us, but it'd be obviously nice now to sort of start living together, but nah, I can't see that happening for at least leading up to Tokyo, so just deal with it.
So, going back to the start then,
okay.
So obviously you've had a bit of a crazy life, really.
Yeah, it's been nuts. It's been nuts.
Have you always been like a crazy sporty kid growing up?
Yeah, always. I've loved sports. I was pretty good. I think speed is a pretty good, like bare bones for most sports that you take part in, especially as a youngster. And when I was a kid, I took part in every sport possible.
Mm-hmm.
Netball, volleyball, swimming, cycling, athletics, football, rugby, cricket, any sport that was offered, like available to me in school, I took part in. So my days were always like busy. My after school was always busy, but I loved it. And I had so much energy and it was just so much fun and I enjoyed it. And then I was sort of specializing in football. Spent a long time playing football, pretty much my whole childhood, at big professional football clubs. Learned a lot of new things, like from a very young age, that people even now I don't think have that experience of being in that professional environment. Spent 8 years at Chelsea Football Club and at the academy there, and you learn so many great things about seeing the first team, how they do things, and how a club and how professionalism you should be on the pitch and off the pitch. And mm-hmm. I think those are values I take into my athletics today. Yeah, I got very, very, like, very lucky to have a long time there, and then slowly transitioned. Well, I say slowly, it was a quick transition into football, into athletics, and now I find myself here in track and field as a full-time athlete, which I'm very fortunate to be.
Yeah. Did you, because obviously you were at Chelsea.
I was at Chelsea for 8 years, and I was at Reading for a year and a half. I took my apprenticeship, my scholarship at Dagenham and Redbridge.
Mm-hmm.
So that also allowed me to go to college. And that was pretty much the main reason of me going to Dagenham. It was, they were a fantastic club, and what they were offering was a great... And at that time when I was sort of playing football, there wasn't many clubs that were willing to let you do education as well. And mm-hmm. Dagenham were one of the fantastic clubs that were like, yeah, we... Our players are going to go to college and get some sort of a backing. So I got that, which allowed me to then apply for university. And then once university, I got accepted into a university, I was sort of like, it's sort of the right thing to do. And it gave me an opportunity to try athletics as well, which was, I'd always dabbled in it and done it, but with no real training. And this was to go to university and do athletics at the same time, I couldn't do that and play football. Yeah. So it was a tough decision actually, and I moved away from it. This was 2012 season, and if I had a bad season or it didn't work out for me, I would have just tried to go back to football. So I was very lucky to actually pick it up pretty quickly and actually progress pretty well. And yeah, World Juniors and Olympics that year was for me fantastic. So
you're 18 years old.
18,
so
yeah.
You just kind of started playing professional football the year before. 2011. Yeah. Juggling that with college, university.
No, college, and then university started, yeah.
So that's pretty mental. When did you... Because you went to European Juniors, right, 2011.
Yeah.
And that was... You weren't training...
So I was at European Juniors. You get selected for the team, and I basically had to go to Dagenham and Redbridge and say, can I have a week off of football? Can I have a week off of a... Yeah, can I go away for a week to take part in the European Juniors? And they were pretty supportive of that. They were like, yeah, absolutely, go... try and win it. And but I was only training for football, and I had no real training for athletics. I probably started going to the track to a guy called John Blackie, who coaches Dean Rasher Smith now. I started going to Blackie from Bromley maybe once, and I went there for like 4 or 5 weeks, like once a week, just to sort of try and get a bit of basics before the European Juniors. And that was really cool. I ended up coming second at the Euro Juniors. And after that, yeah, met a coach called Michael Afalaka, who was really lovely and chatted to me a lot and really helped me out, and decided in the 2012 season to stop playing football and give athletics my... Well, actually, it was January of 2012. I was still playing football up just in October, November, December. And then in January, when I got offered my pro contract in football, for me at that level, it wasn't enough for me to say completely no from athletics and no from university. So I turned it down and, yeah, ended up going to train with Michael. And, yeah, the rest of that year is sort of as it was. It was brilliant.
At that age, though, to have, like, a pro contract, yeah, maybe they're not the biggest club in the world, but you've got a pro
contract.
It's
what I've been working for my whole career. Yeah. And every club I've been at, it's... So I was at Chelsea for 8 years and I got offered a scholarship there. But the reason I didn't take that scholarship was because it was education again. It was that we were expected to take 2-3 days off of school. I went to my school, middle of GCSEs, which now you look back and you think that's GCSEs, but they were like, no, you can't take 2-3 days off of school like for a football. And I'm really glad that my school said that. And my parents made the decision to say, we can't do that. So we went to a different club where I didn't have to do that. And I'm really glad. At the time, I hated them. I was like, what are you doing? I'm at Chelsea. I've got offered a scholarship. I've got offered my youth. I can get into the youth team. And then they were just like, sorry, no, not. Yeah. That's education comes first, like before football. And a lot of, I think it was myself and maybe one other person of my age group that decided not to take the scholarship, and the rest took it. And the numbers don't really translate into how many of those guys end up playing for the first team, and you miss out on that education when you're that young. You can't go back and redo it. So I'm very fortunate that my parents really, really were on it and allowed me to sort of get that education. But yeah, 18 years old, you get offered a professional contract, which is what you've been working for your whole life, and to turn it down on a whim that you might be able to run fast in track and field, you don't even know.
Yeah.
It was a big risk, but I enjoyed it, and I joined up with such a fantastic group who taught me a lot of things. Jeanette Kwachi was probably the main figure of that group. She was one of the old guard who'd been to an Olympic final and sort of took me under her wing. I remember sitting me down that year at World Juniors, and just we went through the list of what had previously won it, and she said, you can easily win this, so easily. And luckily for me, I did, and other members of my group basically said, if I don't win the World Juniors, don't come back to the training group. So it was quite funny, but I was, like I said, very fortunate that that year just sort of panned out pretty well for me.
Yeah, I mean, what point? Because, I mean, for Euro Juniors, you have to obviously get selected. You have to be running times anyway.
Yeah.
So how did you end up running the times?
I ran for my school. So the long story, so I ran for my school and in competitions, and then we had the Kent School Games. So I went to the Kent School Games, like, and it was... When I think about how lucky I was... So I was playing for Chelsea at the time, and the Kent School Games was on a weekend, and when we played fixtures, we would have like 3 or 4 fixtures, then we'd have a off weekend, then we'd have 3 or 4 fixtures, then we'd have an off weekend. And the Kent School Games came on an off weekend. So the only reason I went to the Kent School Games was because Mum was like, oh, you haven't got football that weekend, you might as well go and give it a shot. And I was like, okay. So I went, and imagine I had a football fixture and I didn't end up going to the Kent School Games. So this was 2010, and I then got... So Kent School Games, I then got selected for English schools. Mm-hmm. I came second at English schools and then did UK school games and stuff, just little competitions in the UK. And then the next season, 2011, I didn't run that many times. I only ran a few times, and I think I ran like 10:35 or something. And then I then got selected to go for the nationals, the under 20 nationals, which again... It was on an off weekend, and I was like, oh, cool, perfect. I went to the under 20 nationals. I came second there, and I got selected for the European Juniors that way. So it was actually the way it works out is it's actually crazy, because it's
based on it being an off weekend of football.
Yeah, it was an off weekend because it was right at the end of the season, football season, because football season was winter, and it was sort of when we were doing pre-season as well. So was like, for the when you're playing at a football academy like that, you go all the way through the summer, you do win, you do summer camps and stuff, and took the weekend off and was so fortunate to make the team and got selected for the European Juniors. Went to the European Juniors, came second, and then that was it for me. And then 2012 season came around.
Yeah.
I started training once or twice a week, but still playing football. So I was playing football during the day, once or twice a week going to Lee Valley in North London. And my dad used to take me, because it was before I was really driving. And then got my car, could start driving myself. And then January came, football, like, yeah, we would like to offer you a professional contract, but no more university, no more athletics. And I was just like, the contract that you're offering me isn't enough for me to say no. It was at Dagenham and Redbridge, they were League One at the time, and it just wasn't for me enough to just completely say no. So yeah, that was the end of football. So it was, like I said, it was sort of a transition, but it was a very sudden, quick transition. And then I remember waking up the next day, not going to football, driving to Lee Valley in the morning, early in the morning, to go train for athletics, thinking, what have I done? What have I done? This is crazy. And then, yeah, just now I'm in track and field and I love it. I wouldn't change it for the world. I love what I do, and it's go to some amazing places around the world and meet some fantastic people and friends that I'll keep for the rest of my life, and that's only because I do track and field now. So
yeah, I mean, that was a bit of a 2012 was a crazy year for mm-hmm. you. I mean, you had a huge PB drop. You went to like 10.05.
Yeah.
And you ran that at World Juniors, which is, yeah. Is it nearly a World Junior record?
Yeah, or? Yeah. I think, yeah, the World Junior record at the time was like 10.01.
Yeah.
And I ran 10.05.
It was a championship record.
Yeah. It's still the championship record, actually. Like, I remember every couple of years I see the World Juniors and I'm like, oh, I wonder if my championship record will stay. So it's, it stayed this year, so we'll see in a couple of years' time. But people will break it, I think. Trayvon Brummell should have broken it a few years ago, 2014, when he ran 9.97. He was absolutely flying, but don't think the conditions they had at the champs were the best. So yeah, pretty lucky to hold on to that record still, but I'll hold it, I'll take it while I can. So it was World Juniors was wicked. 10.05, ended up getting selected for the London Olympics, which really, I think, was a really good platform for me as a young athlete to sort of put myself out there into terms of the British public. And I think,
was it a shock to be
unbelievable? Like, there was a good group of athletes. It was myself, Katarina Johnson Thompson, Andy Pozzi, Holly Bradshaw. Like, there was a core group of us that went from sort of being all young on the junior teams together to this sort of, all of a sudden we're in the big public eye, everything we're doing is getting looked at more at the Olympic Games. And nothing can prepare you for that experience of walking out into a stadium when you're that age, home crowds, everyone was screaming, like, and it wasn't just like how good, like, it was screaming. I've never had an experience like that. My arms, I still get goosebumps thinking about it. It was
walking out in the stadium for your beats. What was
nuts? Nuts. I mean, because in 2012, like, it was really cool. We didn't realize the scale of the Olympics until we got into London, because we were at a holding camp in Portugal.
Mm-hmm.
Got into London and we were just like, what is happening? Like, everything we were doing, there was cameras following up, like the athletics team bus, and I guess people wanted to see athletics at the Olympic Games. And I remember warming up for my heats and walking into the stadium. It was a long walk from the warm-up track into the stadium. So we got into the stadium and I remember just before you come out, you're in that little tunnel bit, and people are looking over the side and everyone is screaming, good luck, Adam. Like, and I'm like trying not to smile, because I'm like, you know, get yourself together. You've got to run 100 metres and like, you've got to try and run fast. And everyone's looking at me, and even Asafa Powell, who's in front of me, he was in my heat. He was looking at me and he was laughing because he knew that I'd never had anything like that before either. And people were just looking over. And as you walk onto the stadium, into the stadium, it's pure noise. I was just looking around trying to see, like, if I could find my mum and dad, and I couldn't find anyone. And then the camera comes to you, and the cheer I had was the biggest cheer I've ever received. Like, and the British public are always like that. Anytime British athletes are performing, especially in Britain, they really cheer for them. So it's I'm so grateful for that. And I just couldn't help myself but smile, and I lost my head a little bit. And
mm-hmm.
I had to then sort of refocus instantly. I was like, right, let's run 100 metres now. Let's actually get into the zone. And until the starter said, on your marks, it went from one of the loudest experiences to one of the quietest experiences. I remember he said, on your marks, and I got into my blocks, and it was so quiet. I could hear myself breathing on the start line. I could hear all of the other guys breathing as well, and I was just thinking, oh, this is crazy. And yeah, just ran the heat, got through.
Do you remember it, like the heat?
I don't remember running the heat. I remember before, and I remember crossing the finish line. Actually running the race, it's when athletes are sort of at that level in the zone, 99% of them won't be able to actually remember actually the run or the performance or the jump, because you're just tuned in, you're in an autopilot and your body's just doing it. So I don't really remember doing it. I remember sort of getting out well, from what I've really tried to remember it, and I remember sort of thinking about 40-50 meters, oh, I'm in the mix here, and then I just a big tall Jamaican just going, a Safa Power just went. I was just like trying to just focus on my technique, qualified well, and yeah, then the stadium just erupted that I'd qualified, and it was just fantastic, absolutely fantastic. 18-year-old me just living life just on top of the world. Everyone was shouting for me, and it's like I said, there's no better feeling than that.
6 months earlier, you were considering staying in football.
Exactly, but that's what I mean. Like, people don't realize that, and now I take it for granted. People don't realize how, for me, how crazy being there was, because 6 months earlier I stopped football, and I was so close to maybe even taking a professional contract at football, and none of this would have been a reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where my life would have gone, but I'm so happy I took this route, because it's, yeah, having experiences like that, I'm so fortunate and lucky to have done and got that experience from such a young age, and I can use those experiences now from sort of every champs I went to when I was younger, Olympics, Worlds, to Europeans in 2014, to really progress and mentally keep me strong throughout these seasons now.
Yeah, I mean, you qualified well in the heats.
Yeah.
Then semi-finals, you actually still ran really well.
I ran okay. I ran 10.06.
What were you expecting?
Do you know what, honestly? So the qualification was first two,
mm-hmm,
in the heat. And obviously I got the start list, and I see Tyson Gay, Johan Blake, two of the quickest men in the world. And I just looked, I was so defeated. I was like, what has happened? Like, that's it. There's no way I can beat either of these two. These two are running, they both run 9.6, 9.7, whatever. They're both two of the quickest men in the world. And that hindered me, I think, a little bit, because I was always thinking that in my mind. And I ran okay. I came third. I had a really bad start, but I came through pretty strong, 10.06. But I missed out on the final by 0.04 of a second, which is like nothing. It's like the length of an iPhone. It's absolutely nothing. And I think if I'd had a little bit more belief, I might have got a better start, and I might have actually gone through as a fastest loser or something. Like, but that's where I really learned how strong you have to be mentally to be in sprints, and you can't have any sort of distractions and any sort of side thoughts. You need to get rid of them straight away when you're running, because you just need to be focused on what you're doing, on the job at hand, and you can win and lose and careers and medals in thousandths and hundredths of seconds. So it's it was upsetting, but in the grand scheme of things, I walked away from it like, actually, you've done pretty well. Like, you've came third in your semi-final behind two of the fastest men at home Olympic Games. You want to make, in the moment, you're like gutted because you want to have made the final, but I was so grateful for the opportunity I had, and so happy that I delivered, and I think I ran pretty well. So I was positive. I was, yeah, really happy.
I mean, fast forwarding a year later in Moscow.
Yeah.
You were in the semi-finals against, was it Usain Bolt and...
No, Ashmead. In the semi-finals, Ashmead was the Jamaican in the semi-final. But yeah, I sort of had a lot, I'd been working very hard mentally, and I believed in my ability, and I'd done a lot of training that year.
Mm-hmm.
It'd been a hard season. I had surgery in April that season as well. People don't really, I'm really told a lot of people that I had surgery to fix a problem, and it was a slow rehab process back, but I'd done a lot of training, a lot of work, and yeah, Moscow, the semi-final, I just sort of ran, but I was never expecting to go sub-20, like, at all.
Again, because you were 19 at this stage.
I was 19, and I just was running, and my coach was like, we had rounds to do, and he really told me off in the heats, because I ran 2017, like, a lot faster than I needed to have run, but that was me being young and excitable and just wanted to run, and... Yeah, I ended up running sub-20 in the semi, and in the final, not running sub-20, which obviously you want to do it the other way around. So it was fantastic to run sub-20, to be the second Brit ever to do that. And yeah, I didn't even think I'd won the race. I remember crossing the line and looking over to the BBC guys, Phil, and the rest of the producers and stuff, and they were pointing at me, and I was just like, I just couldn't believe it, because I thought Ashmead had got it, and I just dipped for second. But when you watch the race back, it was me that got it, and it was just... euphoria and just nuts. Like, because it's weird, because I ran such a good time, but then I still had the final to prepare for. So that, and then everyone was suddenly saying, oh yeah, you're definitely going to win a medal. And again, you can't think like that. You've just got to go out there and run your own race. And that was the first, one of the first times that I was running against Usain Bolt properly. He was in the lane inside of me in the final. I remember getting out to like 50 meters, thinking I'm doing pretty well. Then all of a sudden, I just see big high knees up by my head. I'm like, yeah, cool. The problem is, I tried to go with him. I was like, I can definitely go with him. I tried to really go with him and just messed up my whole race. And then we sort of all came across the line as sort of like, third, fourth and fifth. We all sort of crossed the line together, and I was fifth place, which, again, fifth place in the world's, now I'd be disappointed with. Back then, I was pretty happy with, and to run sub 20, I had three good runs that championships, and it was nice to walk away from that with a sub 20 performance. I never thought I'd go sub 20 before I ran sub 10, especially after the season I had the year before, going 10:05 into like no wind and 10:06, but it was cool. And then all of a sudden, people start seeing me as a 200 meter runner. Oh, you've got, because of football and your endurance and stuff, you can definitely start running 200. So I did. I started running more 200s, and it sort of paid off.
So before then, did you see yourself as a 200 meter runner?
My PB going into the champs was 20.3, I think. Yeah, 20.3. So it was okay. Nothing special. And not at all, because it was such a long way, and you feel so tired after you run the 200. So I never planned to ever be run the 200, but I'd done a lot of work that year, and the 100 was very competitive, and my coach wanted me at the time, he wanted me to start going into champs and doubling up. So he said, you need that experience as a 200 meter runner at a championship, so this year we're going to focus on doing the 200 meters, which was always the aim. And I did that, and now I still want to hopefully go and double up. I still think my 100 has a lot of improvements now to do, and even my 200. But I never expected to ever even run a 200 properly, and especially run that fast. And hopefully, I believe I can run a lot faster. It's just kept getting the right race at the right time of your body, at the right time of the year, against the right people. And when all the things add up, hopefully it will happen.
What was it like for you in Moscow? Because you just run sub 20, you're lining up for this final. People have been saying, you know, you can get a medal now.
Yeah.
How do you cope with that mentally? Like, what were you thinking?
It's tough mentally. People don't realise athletics is physically cool, but you can be in the best shape of your life. But mentally, if you're not ready and you're not prepared, that hinders your performance more than if you physically weren't in shape. And your mental strength is so important. So for me, all I was thinking about was run my own race, run your own race, it's fine, just run, just go out there, you've done it every day in training, it's no different, you've just got different people around you, you've got your own lane, no one can affect you. But then also mentally, I had a little voice in my head going, so I call it my little chimp in my head going, oh yeah, but you've got Usain Bolt, and people are saying you can do this, and what happens if you don't do it? And you just start questioning everything you've done for the whole year. And then, as soon as the gun went and Usain Bolt ran past me, I started running Usain Bolt's race, and at that level he's at, you, no one can run the bend like he does. If you try and run the bend flat out, then you've got nothing left for the home straight. And for him, he can get away with running 10.0 or even 9.9 on the bend, not at 100%. And if you try and run that, you're going to be flat out. So yeah, that's what messed me up. But mentally, it's so important to really believe in your own ability and go back to the basics of what got you there. I made that final. I was one of the best in the world that year, and I needed to believe that. And at that time, I didn't, because I wasn't expected to be there. And I wasn't mentally ready to make that final. Mm-hmm. Physically, I thought, everyone's like, "What do you want to do?" Yeah, make the final, of course. But when it actually happens, and you're in that moment, and you're not prepared for it, you're like, "Whoa, I wasn't ready for this." And started working with a psychologist that year as well. And I've been working with him ever since, and we put into a lot of good plays. And since then, mentally, I said to myself, I'm never going to lose a race because I wasn't mentally ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like I've ever lost a race without being physically in shape. Like, mentally, I feel like I'm always one of the strongest on the start line, because I know what I can do, I believe in myself, and mentally, I just get myself into sort of autopilot mode.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I describe that is sort of like, to people who don't do track and field, is like, if you're ever driving, like a car and you're just driving for like 10 minutes, you can sort of just zone out and just be driving naturally, not even thinking about it, and then sort of come to like,
yeah, exactly,
and just be like, maybe, oh yeah, I don't even remember doing that. And for me, that's what I feel like when I'm, a lot of athletes try and feel like being in the zone when they're running. They're not thinking about it, but their body's just doing it. And if you can get like that, you're not thinking, not wasting any thoughts, wasting any energy, thinking about anything else. And if I can get myself into that zone, then I'm good mentally. So,
yeah, I mean, clearly it worked, because going into 2014, I mean, you weren't the new kid on the team anymore.
No.
The World Champs final, you were one of the world's best.
Yeah, that was cool. That was a cool year, 2014, because it was Commonwealths and Europeans, and Commonwealths, I fully believed I could win it. And I came second to a fantastic athlete, Kamal Bailey-Cole. Didn't run as well as I would have liked, but that was cool. And then taking that into Europeans for the 200. So I did the 100 at the commies and then the 200 at the Europeans. Yeah, I was in such good shape and mentally ready. And I'd switched my coaches that year as well. I was with a new coach, but I believed so much in what I was doing, and I was so ready to run. And I ended up running one of my best 200 meter races when it mattered, sort of not the best conditions.
That was a great race, because it was you versus Lemaitre.
Me versus Lemaitre. I'd never raced Lemaitre before.
Hadn't you?
Nope. And I was really, really scared about it until I spoke to my psychologist and my coach and got a bit of perspective about what I was doing. Remembered, this is my own race, he's got his own race, and I just ran my hardest. And I do remember that race actually a little bit, like bits of that race. Like, I remember just getting out of the blocks hard and just thinking, catch me if you can, and then coming off the bend, transitioning well, and just hearing his footsteps in my ear and just thinking, run, 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 run. And then towards the end, he got tight. I got tight, but he got tight a little bit before me, which you can see if you watch the head-on footage. And I was just stepping, and yeah, ended up going sub 20 again. But, and then big headwinds. I think it was, what, 1.5 or 1.6 or something like that. So I was like, I was so happy.
That could have been huge.
Yeah, it could have been. I still.
Well, it was huge anyway.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it could have been a lot faster, but like, that wasn't the point for me. It was winning my first senior title. That was what mattered. And so much work and doubt had gone into that year from other people, because I changed my coach and I moved to Loughborough, and I was still doing university, so I was still travelling between London and Loughborough, which was really, that's really challenging. Sport, yeah, I was doing that for like until 2013, 2014, yeah, up to 2015 really, travelling from London to Loughborough, or when I was training there. And it was hard. It's very hard to mix studies and track and field when everyone else around you, especially even your age, is doing track and field full time. But something that I wanted to do, and I was committed to that, and if you commit to anything, you can do it. So you find a way to get on with it. And yeah, like that senior title was one of my favourites, because it was my first, so I was so happy.
So I guess following on from Zurich 2014, 2015, you wanted the 100 metre PB, needed some revisions.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing. It was like, so in my friends always, they keep me so down to earth and humble. Mm-hmm. It's like they had always, so bear in mind, from running what I'd ran in 2012 to now it's 2015, my PB's only 10.04. They would just call me Mr. Rover 10 seconds in all their phones, and they would all just take the mick out of me. And and I felt that season I was in the best shape I've been in a long time. My training had gone well. I had no injuries. I was lifting well in the gym. I was running fast on the track. And that season went really well. I ran sub 10 in a place called Bedford, but it was very windy. And then I had Birmingham Diamond League the week after. And in the heats, it was a very competitive field. There was Nesta Carter, Mike Rogers, Marvin Bracey, all the Brits were there, CJ. Like, it was very, very competitive. I went 10 flat in the heat. So I just missed out on sub 10, so I was like really annoyed. And then, yeah, ran the final of the Diamond League. So it was the 100 metres, so it was a heats and a final. And ran. And I dipped so hard for the line. I was just chasing the time so much. And like, yeah, dipped so hard for the line. Lost my balance. Landed on my right leg, sort of landed straight. And then I sort of flipped over and ended up tearing my hamstring, like, really badly.
Just from the dip?
It was from the whole dip. And then to look up to the scoreboard and see I'd gone sub 10, but to see how I'd gone sub 10, it was tough, really tough, because mm-hmm. I knew from then my season was going to be over, because yeah. I went and had a scan and my hamstring was in a bad way, mm-hmm. and I'm still getting a lot of problems from it, from that same injury, even now, to this day. So it was not in a good way, but I finally gone sub 10, so that was good. My friends had to change me in their phones to no longer miss or over 10 seconds, which was nice. But that was a tough year and a sort of year that I was planning to go to Beijing and really push on for those
medals,
senior medals.
Was that 100 and 200?
I was going to try and go for both, I think, but yeah, that injury just put a stop to that straight away, which was gutting, absolutely gutting. So I had to sit on the sidelines and watch everyone else run really well. Zarnell came to the UK and was running. Zarnell Hughes was running unbelievable. He should have medalled in the 200 metres.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's hard to just sit there and watch. But I was very supportive, and they took me to Beijing as part of the relay team, and it was good for me to get out there, do some practice with the guys, and I was supporting. And Neil Black, who was the performance director, said he wanted me out there because I was good for team morale and I could get everyone together and happy and very supportive of the team, which, so it was very humbling for me to be out there.
Were you ever going
to
run the
relay? I was going to run. I was actually fixed by the time the champs came around.
Yeah.
But Neil Black ended up making the decision and said, I don't want you risking anything to reignite this injury when we've got Olympics next year. Yeah. So he said to me, you're not running. And I was like, oh, okay, fine. You can't really argue with your PD, so.
How do they make those decisions with relays and that kind of thing? Because there's obviously a few of you in the pool.
There's a lot of us in the pool, especially for the GB team. Like, it depends on your form that season, your skills of relay, how much you've been practicing with the team. And yeah, it really just depends on sort of that stuff, really. So, yeah.
Is it not necessarily down on who's run sub 10 this year? It's who can run the bend the fastest?
Not necessarily on who's, because some people can run a really fast, during the season, but then if you can't exchange a relay baton at the speeds you need to, then you lose too much time. So usually you want your fastest guys in there, but you also want your guys who've got the best hand skills, and the level we're all at the moment, it could be anyone, because everyone's running really fast and everyone's got good handling skills of the baton. So yeah, it honestly, for next season going forward, when everyone's back fit and healthy, it's going to be a tough team to make. It's going to be tough to get yourself in that four. I can just try and run as fast as I can and put myself in the best possible position to get selected. For me, I focus on being individually successful, and hopefully that will then bring me into the relay. But I don't know, it could be anyone at the moment, because we didn't even have Reese Prescott run this season. Danny Talbot was injured this year. Miguel Francis, who competes for Britain, he's runs a crazy bend as well. You've got some fast people that it's going to be a tough team to make.
Let's talk about the Olympics then.
Yeah, okay.
Rio, again, Britain had it was pretty hard to make the team because you had Nathaniel running crazy times at the NCAAs. I think that year was when he really
went
through.
Yeah.
And then there was obviously Zarnell,
Danny Talbot. Like, yeah, it was crazy. It was a 200 was, it's a tough team to make. I think in Britain, it's one of the toughest events to get selected for when everyone's firing, and you have to be on your A game. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'd had that 2014 season. I was at nationals and I came second. Just like Danny Talbot was like a meter and a half ahead of me, and I said to myself, I can't do this. I've got to be in shape for trials, because I was very close to not making the team. So yeah, got myself in shape for trials and yeah, won the nationals, which was cool. And then I know Zarnell had a big injury. Nathaniel had injuries and stuff. He was chasing fitness. He'd done a lot of races that season. So actually it turned out to be okay, but like for those guys, it was horrible. And it was not nice to see your teammates struggle with injury, especially when the year before I'd been there.
Yeah.
Someone like Zarnell, I remember watching him and I remember chatting to him at trials, and he was heartbroken and he was really forcing it to run on one leg. He was running so hard just to make that team. And I said, Zarnell, please don't. That you've got such a long career. Don't force anything. But it's the Olympic Games and it's pretty hard to persuade someone not to try and make that team. So, yeah, he ended up missing out. And then he went away and rehabbed. And now you're seeing the benefits of that, because he's absolutely flying. One of the best sprinters we got in the country.
And
around the world, he's one of the best as well. So it's it's a tough thing, but yeah, for me personally, making that Olympic team, I was so grateful and so happy, and yeah, got selected to go to Rio, and then yeah, got selected to be captain of Rio for the British team, which was again nuts. Like, as a young, I was 23 at the time, and 23-year-old captain. It was it was a weird one, but Neil's reasoning was about me as being a sort of team member, and I can really chat to everyone on the team and hopefully try and inspire them, and I couldn't like I didn't want to lecture people. I didn't want to, like, there's a lot of older people on the team, but I just wanted to share my story and how things had happened with me, and my mentally how I go into things, because mentally I still believe I'm one of the strongest people out there. So for me it was just that. So yeah, very, very fortunate. And yeah, Rio itself, not great, but like, it was okay, but not
I don't know,
not
talk great. Me through Rio for you.
Yeah, I see Rio as a failure, and I will always see it as a failure. I expected to go out and I was really pushing for a medal, and anything other than a medal I saw as a failure. And fourth place, I'd rather have come fourth, missing out by a lot, but I came fourth place, missing out by 0.03 of a second. That is hard. And in that moment, as soon as you see that your name on the scoreboard and it's not in the medal position, you realise that it's been and gone. There's nothing you can do anymore. So I just remember, I ran okay. I ran pretty well in the heats. I ran pretty well in the semis. I had Degrassi and Bolt, and they ended up getting the gold and silver. And they were like having a little jolly up down in the semi final, chatting to each other. And I was in the background just trying to like make my final, made the final, got lane two, which is a tough lane to run from, especially in the 200 meters. And you've got some crazy fast people ahead of me. And my tactics going into the Olympic final were, because I had that experience from when I raced Bolt in 2013. And I know he's going to try and go off the bend, and people are going to try and go with him, and they're going to kill the rest of their race. So he went off, and if anyone goes back and watches the race, you'll see it. He goes off hard, and everyone else goes off hard, and I actually run pretty controlled bend, and I come off the bend like probably in like last place, and then I start coming through, and then I think I'm in medal position, and then I just tighten up like at the end. I start you see the line, and you get a bit angsty, and you want to get to the line quicker, so you start like really fighting, and you dip quite early, and just got out dipped by Lemaitre of all people, which was frustrating. And I'm glad a European got a medal, but I would have liked to have been that European. And there were some fantastic people that year. Sean Merritt had run 19.7 that year, like Alonzo Edwards, like Guliev was in that final as well. There was Chirandi Martina, who ended up running 19.8 the week after. So it was a good final, and a lot of Europeans in that final, but it was hard to miss out on a medal by that much. And I said I saw it as such a failure, and I really, really, yeah, that one still haunts me a lot, because like I said, the Olympic Games is so special, and I might not necessarily get myself in that position again. So I'm gutted I didn't take advantage of that, and I believe to this day I should have got a medal. And if I'd run sub 20, I would have got a silver medal. So, but that just tells you on the day, you never know what's going to happen. And it's it was just a big tear up.
So 2017 was a big year for you. Did you guys, going into that season, did you believe you could win it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think what we believed was we could go out there and challenge for medals individually. CJ was running unbelievably well. Nefanil was running really good in the two. Myself, I didn't have the great season individually. I had a lot of injuries last year, which actually stopped me running pretty well. But like, I got myself fit and into that relay team, and I had to prove my, which is pretty hard when you're in a relay team and you're not running an individual, because you have to prove yourself to run in that relay team through relay practice rather than your performance at the championships. And I was lucky enough to do that. But yeah, going into that relay, we believed we could do it. No one really said, oh, we can definitely do it, because we all just knew it. And it's a hard thing to explain. We were just confident with each other, and we knew what we could do, and we knew our exchanges were going to be good. We knew we had to stretch our exchanges and really like work on them, and that's where it'd be won or lost. And like flat speed, leg for leg, you think about it, it was a pretty tough job. You think the Americans had Rogers, then they had Gatlin on second, who was on my leg.
Coleman.
You had Coleman on anchor. But we all believed it doesn't matter who they are, when we come together as a team, we're gonna be fine. And we got the baton, and CJ started off the relay, gave us such a he ran the bend of his life. He ran so fast, gave me the baton, I had a good change, and all I remember seeing was the Chinese athlete and the Japanese athlete outside of me, and I was just trying to chase them as hard as I could. And I gave the baton to Danny. Danny ran the Danny on the bend. Danny Talbot is just phenomenal on the bend. Like, not many people can match him. What he does, it's when we were running relay practices and we do, like, me and him were practicing the bend. I'm like, oh, Danny, please just allow me, man. Like, because he makes you look so bad. And then yeah, Nefanil brought it home. Nefanil had the baton and just held off Coleman like just flying. When you're flying in athletics, so especially on the last leg, he was in great shape. So when you're actually flying, it's pretty hard to run you down. That's what Usain Bolt makes it look so easy, but it's not easy to do. And I remember just watching that, and then I remember seeing Usain Bolt pull up, but then that was sort of out of my mind, and I just remember seeing Nefanil, and I was thinking, please don't lose it, and he just held off Coleman and dipped. And
could you tell?
I could tell because I was watching the screen, and on the screen you could just about see because of the angle, and I just dropped to my knees and dropped to my back, and I was celebrating. And I just couldn't believe that we'd done it in front of a home stadium as well. That just doesn't happen, and the whole crowd just went mental and erupted. And it was the last event of the night, and I remember hugging the boys and just not wanting to let go. And it was the best I've ever felt on the track. And the whole stadium, usually at the end, towards the end of the athletics events or sports events, people start filtering out. The whole stadium was full, and they stayed, and we did a whole lap of honour, and it was just,
yeah,
something I'll never forget. Like, I'm so lucky to be a part of that team, and to do it in London is an experience with those guys who are all my friends. Isn't something I'll never forget, and it was just, yeah, crazy since then.
Going into, because I remember before that race, it could have been the Brits, but it could have been one of the other 17.
It could have been anyone. It could have been literally been anyone. The Chinese were running well, the Japanese were running well, Jamaicans, obviously with Bolt on the last leg, Americans, like Canada, always there or thereabouts. So it's literally, you couldn't have called it.
How do you compose yourself? Like, you're walking out into the stadium and your teams, like, how do you guys?
Oh, mentally. So you know the work's done, and mentally we're all pretty strong. And it's quite funny in a relay, because there's a lot of bravado from the other teams, and people like putting on a front, and you can always tell when someone's putting on a front. People like singing and like making lots of noise, and as Brits we were just standing there pretty cool, just chatting to each other, like, yeah, we know what to do. Actually, it's quite funny, in the bus on the way we were just talking, because I know CJ and Nefanil are Arsenal fans, so we were actually just talking about Arsenal's terrible season. So it was quite, that's what we were talking about on the way to the track, and chatting about football, and just keep yourself relaxed, because there's nothing else you can do. The work's already done. Your body's how it is, the exchanges are as they are, and there's no point stressing and fretting about it. So just relax, and the more relaxed you are, the quicker you run. So for us, we were just chilling, walked out. It's quite weird actually, because I was on the bend, and I looked across and I saw my cousin, one of my good friends and my girlfriend on that bend. They obviously had got round there somehow, and I saw them and I was like, oh, hi. And then I had to sort of refocus, and then people were just like shouting, come on GB, come on Adam. And all the other guys would have had the same thing as well on every corner. And yeah, as soon as that gun goes, it's pretty nervy time. Like, the gun goes and you're like, oh my God, it's happening. And then CJ's running towards you, and you've got a sprinter running towards you, and you put footsteps around 30 pigeon steps away, put a piece of tape down. As soon as he hits that tape, you just have to turn around and run blind, and run your hardest to run away from him. Listen, out of all the people, like out of all the different languages, out of all the people in the crowd, he has to shout hand, then you have to put your hand back, trust he's going to put it in your hand, grab it, hope it's in that 20 meter box, and then just try and run your hardest. And then it's quite funny, when I was running down the home straight, and then you're not really thinking, you're just trying to run. And then when you get closer to Danny, you sort of have to then wake up again and think, oh my God, I need to cool hand and actually put it in. I need to do a movement when you're trying not to die. So you cool hand and you put it in. I put it in his hand, and then job's done. I just literally was a spectator watching yeah. Danny run. And as he gave the baton, I then turned and watched the screen, and everyone on that bend was just looking at the screen there, and it was just like, yeah, nuts, absolutely nuts. But it's a scary thought. Running the relay is so intense, and that's what makes it so exciting. But it's high risk, high reward, and high danger, because, like I said, one little bad movement and it could be game over. So.
And can you hear everybody else saying hand or whatever else?
I was actually so tuned into CJ. Like, I don't, we'd practiced so much, like, I knew what his voice was like, but you can hear the noise. And when you're running, you can't hear anything, but when everyone's coming around the bend and everyone starts going off at different times, like, so you're on a stagger, so you're there, I'm watching CJ, watching him, this guy wants to go a bit early, or this guy starts running early, and you don't see... I didn't see CJ until he was about 10 metres from the tape because of the stagger, because of the... who was inside of us? French, maybe? Or some, whoever was inside of us blocked CJ's view, blocked my view of CJ until he gets past him. As soon as he hits that tape, it's just go. But it's so difficult, and that's why we practice it so much, and that practice paid off. And I think you're seeing a lot of other teams now realising flat speed isn't just enough. It's about how good those changes are. Yeah. So.
And hearing, I mean... Well, can you only just hear like the handing and the whistling of the batons like coming closer? It must be that it's so daunting.
It is daunting.
Running blind.
Oh. It's daunting because you hear it and you hear because that baton with the wind is going. CJ's face was like, and it's like one of the scariest things you're gonna see, and you think in that moment you've got everyone watching you, like in the stadium, you've got millions of people back home watching. You make a mistake, it's on you because it's so individual. So it's like you're just thinking. Just run how you run and just get out hard. Hopefully he's going to catch. Hope, just that. It's the biggest thing is trust, because you're running. As soon as you have to hope you hit that check mark, because he's moving, you have to anticipate when he's going to get over it. Mm-hmm. And then you start running. And then, yeah, you just have to put your head down and trust that he's going to catch you. And he was in a fantastic form, CJ, and he caught me. And I just remember hearing him go, run, go, right. Like, I thought he was going to run past me, and then I was thinking, oh, I better run. So it was pretty funny, but yeah, a lovely way to sort of end, for me, a bad season of injuries and stuff. And injuries in this sport, they can really mess you up, and it's hard when you're younger to run so freely without any pain and no worries. And when as you get older, you're sort of more aware of every sort of little niggle in your body, and yeah, it becomes about managing those injuries, and how you manage them will depend on how your season goes. So,
And how does it feel? Obviously, you guys won, but seeing Usain go down, I mean, what?
Do you know what? I don't really remember seeing him, and by the time I remember seeing him go down and thinking, oh, like the guy just dropped, like it was crazy. But then obviously celebrating, and as I got round, because I was on the top bend, so I got round with all the third leg runners or second leg runners, he was already gone. Like he'd already walked off with his Jamaican team, so I didn't actually get a chance to actually go up to him and see if he was all right, which is a bit frustrating because obviously he's a legend of the sport, and I wish he was. It would have been nice for him to finish. Like I'm not going to say it would have been nice for him to win. It would have been. I'm not saying that at all. I would have loved. I'm not saying that. But it would have been nice for him to finish and medal, because what he's done for athletics will not be done for a very long time. He was the face of it, and he gave it such a good name in a place where athletics was going through a tough time, and had a good 3 or 4 years of real hard times and people lacking credibility and lots of doping scandals, and he was always sort of that shining light that people wanted to see. And he carried that mantle on his back by himself for so many years and always delivered at the champs. So he was a big inspiration and a big role model for myself, and I know pretty much every other sprinter, and he's such a nice guy as well. He'll chat to you, and if you see him, he'll always say hi, and like he's so normal, like which is crazy. People always like, you must have met Usain Bolt. I'm like, yeah, but he's so nice and normal and just so willing to give advice. And yeah, to see him go down that way was really sad, and it no way sums up anything to do with his career. He's the best sprinter in the world ever. He's the greatest of all time, and he'll always be that in my eyes. So, yeah.
Yeah, athletics is a true, like... somebody said to me the other day about talking about athletics and just saying, like, athletics doesn't care about your feelings, doesn't care about the fairy tale.
Nope.
It's brutal.
It's brutal. And you're only as good as your last race in athletics. And even it's really sad, because even after he went down, people are like, oh... Do you know what's really annoying is after the 100 metres, obviously, he came third. The guy has won everything. Multiple times, broken world records, like he's just the best. And after the 100 metres, like I said, you're only as good as your last race. People are like, oh, Usain Bolt came third. Well, people were saying rubbish about it. And I'm like, it's crazy that even the greatest of all time, they can even try and belittle like that. Like, you got to think for the rest of us sprinters who aren't running that fast yet, like it's, we got no hope. Like, so you have to be running fast every race, because that's what people remember. So it's crazy. It's so... There's no room for mistakes, and like I said, athletics is so brutal. Doesn't necessarily care about giving someone a fairy tale ending, because it would have been nice for him to have finished with a medal, with his Jamaican team, and but he didn't, which is really a shame.
But off the back of 2017, you boys had like loads of media attention. Do you feel an extra pressure that you not felt before because of that? Or
I didn't. Maybe the other guys did. I didn't. I at the end of the day, for me, like, and I don't want to belittle the medal. It's fantastic what we did as a relay team, but it was a relay medal,
mm-hmm.
and a relay is always second priority to winning medals individually.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I didn't have the best individual year, and I don't think none of us won medals at the individual. And for I think a lot of us have that attitude that that's what the priority is. And like I said, the attention was great, but we don't want to be classified as relay runners,
mm-hmm.
a relay nation. We want to be classified as a sprint nation that can be challenging for those individual medals. But when we come together as a relay, we're going to be hard to beat.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, for me, it was cool. I enjoyed that. Media attention was great. It was fantastic to do. But then you just go back and start training again and working on making the individual team and trying to lead up to Tokyo, put yourself in the best possible position and run as fast as possible. So, yeah, it was brilliant. But get some perspective, it was a relay run. And in terms of the British team, Mo Farrell was the only individual medalist at that champ. So it was really on a lot of us young athletes to step up and start filling the shoes of Mo and Jess and Greg, who are not going to be around anymore. So, yeah, that's where I think we should be focusing on stuff. The relay's great, and it's always great that we can come together and put out a performance, but individually we've got to step up.
Yeah, I mean, the Euros, which have just been,
mm-hmm.
How would you assess not just yourself but the overall team?
It was a good team performance. I think it was one that we topped the medal table. For me, not great. Again, a lot of problems this year with injury, which it's like changed the record a little bit. But it's so annoying, injuries. Like, you can train so hard all year,
mm-hmm.
and if you're not fit at the right time, you miss that part of the season, and you have to wait a whole another year to do it. And injuries are just like coming to finish where I finished at the Euros, considering how my body was. I was running about 80-85%. From lane two, I was pretty happy with, but like gutted because I knew I should have been a lot closer to Guliev. He ran an unbelievable race. Like,
yeah.
He was in form. Like, but I should have been a lot closer, and I should be going sub 20. But this year, I've got to do a lot of work and hopefully bring it into next year. Doha and Olympics is what really matters. Euros is good, but I've won it before, and I know in the grand scheme of things, compared to the Worlds and the Olympics, it's not. It's third on the pecking order.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in terms of the team, fantastic. We won so many medals, and hopefully those European medals can start translating to world and Olympic medals, which I believe they can. People like Laura Muir, Katarina, Holly Bradshaw, like there's
Dina.
Dina, where you look at Dina, she was athlete of the champs,
mm-hmm.
of the whole Europeans. I think she was unbelievable, like to what she did.
Yeah.
Especially from last season as well. People forget she broke her foot last season, came back and still ran what she ran in the Worlds. And this season, it's just inspiring to see. And I hope it carries on, and she'll be one of the best female sprinters in the world of all time. And it's nice that you get, for me, we did a lot of stuff together when we were younger, and I've known her for a long time. She's like my little sister. So for me to see that, it's very, very inspiring and motivates me to want to go out there and challenge the best as well, because she just ran like a beast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no other word to say it. She ran like a beast. Unbelievable. There was no stopping her. No one was getting close to her.
And for you now, like, seeing the success that Britain has had in the sprinting, like, you know, loads of guys running sub 10.
Yeah.
Women running sub
sub 11. Yeah, sub 20. Yeah.
Sub 11. For Doha and Tokyo, what is the goal for you for 2019?
For me, 2019, put myself in the final, and if it can happen when you're in the final, and I want to be challenging for a medal, whether it's in the one, the two, it depends on how my body is, but probably more than likely the two, because at the moment I've still got to build some more fitness up. But yeah, put yourself in the final first. And the way the field is at the moment, everyone's running crazy, like people running 19.6s like they're nothing, like that. But I believe I can get to that level. I just have to mm-hmm. keep working, believe in myself, trust my process, have patience. Problem a lot of young athletes have is they see people running really fast and they want that straight away. don't realise it's a slow process and everyone develops at different rates. And Linford Christie didn't win an Olympic gold medal till he was 31 or whatever it was. Like, people develop at different ages. And for me, I trust what I'm doing. I just need to get my body right.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like I said, I would like to make that final in Doha. And once you're in the final, anything can happen. And I expect to be hopefully pushing for medals. So
and what event?
Yes, one or the two. It would be nice, probably the two right now, but we'll see. We'll see.
I mean, it's exciting times then for Tokyo. I mean, you did London, you got the semi-finals, Rio, you're fourth. I think the way that it's looking,
hopefully, I hope so. I really hope so. If my body's right, I know I can challenge the best in the world. And
you'll be in the four. You'll be kind of at the age stereotypically for sprinters.
Yeah, I'll be 25 in Doha, 26 in Tokyo. Wait, let me just 24. Yeah, 20. Yeah, I'll be 20. So I'm still like by the time Tokyo comes, I'll be 26. I should hopefully be in sort of getting to sort of my prime. I know sprinters develop at different ages. Yeah, some yeah. are younger, some are older. But for me, I don't feel like I've hit my prime yet. I feel like I've touched on it a little bit, and we've seen glimpses of maybe what I can do. But I've never really reached that potential yet, and I still feel like I've got time to do that, and I'm doing my best to do it.
Yeah, that's amazing, and I think. Yeah, well, because we forget how young you actually are still.
But that's a lot of people forget, because I made the team at such a young age and I've always made the team.
Yeah.
People see me as one of the old guard, but I'm only 24 at the moment, so I'm still like, I have experience of someone who's been in the sport for 10, 15 years, but mm-hmm. I'm still always learning as well, always learning. Yeah. So there's a lot that I still don't know and a lot that I'm still trying to learn, but I've got a lot of experiences that I had from such a young age that really do help me in the champs to come, which give me an edge, I think.
Cool. Well, along with my questions, you had quite a few questions.
Oh yeah, okay. I saw a few of them on Twitter, yeah.
Okay, so first one is from a guy called Matt Smith, and he's asking you what your favourite film, favourite album, favourite book is.
Okay.
Loaded, pretty hard. I mean,
whoa, straight off the bat.
Yeah.
Okay. So my favourite film this is really a my favourite film is a film called About Time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you've seen it. It's
Is it the time travel with the guy? Yeah.
Yeah, I love that film. Like I don't know why. It's not like an action-y film or anything. It's just a comedy and like it's a rom-com type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a feel-good film. I watch it and I watch it with my girlfriend and I absolutely love it. So
oh.
that's probably my favourite film. He said my favourite album. Oh, this is hard. This is really hard.
You can give me a few.
Oh, but there's so many different genres of albums. I like Drake's Take Care album. That was an absolute banging album. Mm-hmm. Kanye West and Jay-Z's Watch the Throne album. Like, but then also like going back old school, Bastille's first album.
Mm-hmm.
Mumford & Sons is like, what's that album? I can't remember. Mumford & Sons, one of their albums. Like, they used to be a big Mumford & Sons fan. Like, there's such an array of different music that I listen to. So yeah, probably any of those, really.
Do you incorporate music into training at all?
Yeah, it's just to relax and just chill. Mm-hmm. It's nice to just not be so focused and serious on your drills and just to chill and actually just get you fired up a little bit. So it depends mm-hmm. on what the song is and what mood I'm in.
And favourite book?
My favourite book is... I used to read so much, but... I actually haven't read a book in like the last year and a half, which is to the dismay of my girlfriend. I've got three in my suitcase, which I was literally going to start later. But my favourite book is, I did like The Girl on a Train. That was pretty good.
Yeah,
I like Lord of the Flies. I like a lot of that sort of old school
GCSE
stuff.
Staple.
Yeah, that's the one that we studied a lot. But like, nah, The Girl on the Train's pretty good. The Couple Next Door's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you've read that, but that's a pretty good one.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, there's a couple. Yeah.
Okay, next question is from Richard Matthews, and it's, have you ever tried a field event?
I haven't. In school, long jump and stuff, triple jump, but mm-hmm. never properly. I train with Christian Taylor, who thinks, so I always like watch him do the triple jump, and he always winds me up if you ask him. I'm always trying to give him advice. I'm like, Christine, if you try this in the triple jump, you might break the world record. And he's just like, Adam, stop it, man. So he's quite funny. But yeah, maybe I'd like to try the long jump or the triple jump. He thinks I'd be useless at it, but we'll see.
What do you reckon of the long jump? What do you reckon you could do?
I definitely think try and get over 7 meters at least. I don't know about any further than that. all the sprinters, you speak to them, they're like, yeah, man, I'll definitely hit 8 metres. And I'm just like, because we have this discussion the other day with the 800, and the British guys are just like, I'd definitely run sub 2 minutes for the 800. And I'm looking at them like, what? Because I always banter with like Laura Muir and Lindsay Sharp and stuff. I'm like, yeah, if we were to run at 800 against each other, who do you think would win? And they always obviously back themselves and like, too right, because they'd destroy us. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see sprinters doing different events because, yeah, for me, long jump, hopefully.
Okay, next question. It was from Danny Tolhurst, and it's, if you could change one thing about track and field, what would it be? Pretty loaded question, really.
That is a loaded question. If I could change one thing about track and field, I would give athletes more say in how the sport is run. And I know we're trying to get that way now, but I feel like the sport is still run very much to the benefit of either TV broadcasting or the people high up in athletics rather than what's best for the actual track and field athletes. And I'll definitely make... That's what I want to go into after I finish running, is to try and work on giving athletes more control and more power. And yeah, I feel like athletes sort of get taken advantage of a little bit sometimes, and we're just seen as sort of, if you don't want to do it, there's another athlete who is willing to do it. And we don't actually, yeah, I feel like we need more power in as athletes. Yeah. I won't get into the issues now because it's just a fun podcast, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess you can go into stuff like the Athletes Commission.
The Athletes Commission is great, but hopefully we see them with a bit more power. Because I know there's been commissions before, and it's cool, I'm on the commission, but actually if you can't change anything, and your opinion is, if they're like, cool, then like I'm on the BOA, the British Olympic Committee, and I know that every decision that gets made for the British Olympic team has to come through the commission to be approved. And if it's the same for the Athletes Commission on the IAAF, then brilliant. So hopefully that's going to be the case. So,
okay, cool, interesting. And last question, this is from Lorraine O'Connor.
Okay.
And this is, like, Britain had a fairly successful World Under 20s this year.
Yep.
With likes of Niamh Emerson, Jonah
Philoco. Yeah, they smashed it.
All winning gold medals, titles. What piece of advice would you give to these guys who are looking to now transition to a senior?
The biggest bit of advice, and I would have given myself at the time, is have patience and keep enjoying the sport.
Mm-hmm.
Have patience and work hard and look after your body. If your body's not right, you can't compete. You can't win medals unless you're on the line. You can't get on the line unless your body is like 100% fit. So look after your body, don't force anything, and keep working hard, keep training hard. Enjoy track and field because it's a fantastic sport. It's one of the best sports you can take part in. So you travel to some amazing places and you meet some amazing people, and yeah, have that patience.
Okay, right, so now the final segment of today's podcast.
Do we have a jingle? Do you have a sting or something?
I need to get some kind of...
Ding!
Yeah, we'll get a... Some
voices.
Some game show sound effects in the background. You guys might be hearing if I've managed to find some. But if not, enjoy the bear podcast. Anyway, okay, so we're going to play a little game. In honour of Statman John being here, we're going to play a game called Beat the Statman. That's when the jingle will come in. Like, ding.
So when I beat him, is it gonna be renamed?
That sounds like countdown. Well, it can be like Beat Michelle. Okay, so I'm gonna ask you guys a series of questions. They could be true or false, A, B, or C options, and yeah, basically whoever gets the most wins. There will be a tiebreaker question, so I'm kind of hoping for that because it's quite fun. But yeah. Okay, so question number one: Sydney McLaughlin, the collegiate superstar. She is ranked inside the top 10 in 3 events. This is performance, so not world rankings. This is outright performance. She is ranked inside the top 10 in 3 different events. The 400 meter hurdles, the 400 meters, and the 200 meters.
Is that senior level?
Is that senior level? Is that true or false? Should I give you your answers now? Do you want all...
Yes, I think we
should. Yeah, okay, so Michelle, what did you write down?
True.
John?
False.
John, you are correct. She is ranked number 1 in the 400 hurdles, number 7 in the 400, but 13 in the 200.
Yeah. I remember looking this up a couple of months ago, and she was still in the...
Yeah, she was close. I think there were some 10. Pretty quick 200s by the end of the year.
Oh,
anyway,
wow.
Okay.
Just
question.
Give me your head start then.
Next question. So beating the stat man is harder than it looks. Next question. Who has jumped the greater distance this year? Mondo Duplantis in the pole vault, or Gabby Thomas, the 200 meter runner, in the women's long jump? So, Mondo Duplantis in the men's pole vault, or Gabby Thomas in the long jump? Who has jumped the greatest distance this year?
Gabby.
You said Gabby?
I've got Gabby.
Correct. Yeah, Gabby Thomas has jumped 6 metres 11 this year. Oh, Mondo Duplantis has jumped 6 metres and 5. So, yeah. Both of you can get a point for that one. Yay. Okay, next question. Shaunae Miller-Weibo, if she were to compete in a pentathlon, based on her PBs, what score would she get? Now, on her athlete profile, I'm going to leave you three options. On her athlete profile, she doesn't have a 60 metre hurdles labelled. So what I've done is I've given her 1,000 points for that. So that's 858 she's run for the 60 metre hurdles, so that's 1,000 points. So, based on the rest of her PBs, would she score A, 4,104 points, B, 4,273 points, or C, 4,358 points?
They have to be a multi-events question. That's just playing into his hands, really.
John does like a multi-event.
There is a bias happening.
You're a German. You're meant to like multi-events too.
I do, but we're better outdoors than indoors.
You were a multi-event, weren't you? You've probably done a pentathlon. I've never done one. So.
I actually have. It's like different in Germany.
Done the K-cathlon, John.
Every day.
Okay, so... okay, so, Michelle, you go first. Hit me.
I'm saying B, 4,273.
Okay.
The first option, 4,001.
You're both wrong. It's C, 4,358.
Ooh, squeaky bum time.
Yeah. So, yeah, she would have done... so, that's 858 in the 60-meter hurdles for 1,000 points. So, that was... what I just gave her, but she would do 171 in the high jump, 11:50 circa 11:50 in the shot put, 6:29 in the long jump, and then 2:12 in 800. Oh, yeah, literally. Let's see her do
it. How fast did you run in the media 800 in London last year?
2 minutes something.
Could you beat something? Okay, so the current scores are: John, you're on 2, Michelle, you're on 1. So yeah. Michelle, you can still call this back. Okay. Again, just okay, so another question. So this isn't this year, this is just on based on personal bests. Whose PB is the greatest distance? Tori Franklin in the triple jump or heptathlete Caroline Schaefer in the shot put? Whose PB is the greatest distance? Tori Franklin in the women's triple jump or heptathlete Caroline Schaefer in the women's shot put? Now you've got three options: Tori, Caroline, or equal. So A, B, or C.
Ooh. Ooh, an equal I didn't think about. Mm. Oh. Fun fact, I have competed in a pentathlon against Caroline Schaefer when we were about 11 years old.
And how did that go?
Well, one of us is an athlete now and one of us isn't. Is John going first?
Yeah, John, you can go first this time. Who are you going for?
I'm going to go for Schaefer.
Okay. I've got Schaefer as well.
You're both wrong, it's equal.
Oh.
I kind of threw you a bone there, guys. Yeah. I thought you...
Well, I thought it was a red herring.
A double bluff.
So what's the exact distance?
14 metres and 84 centimetres.
Oh, I had 80.
Oh my god, John wrote it down. Oh. He wrote it down. So you are still a stat man, but... Okay.
Surely that's a bonus point.
Nope.
Okay.
No bonus
points. Okay, so final question, and then we do have a tiebreaker, which we might just do anyway for fun. Okay. Kevin Mayer, when he set his world record in Talence, which event gave him the most points in his decathlon?
Could we have played this game last time when we were talking about the record? It feels so long ago.
It's pretty close, between three particularly.
If both of us can't get it in our first guess, can we go for a second?
You can have a second guess, yeah. Give you a chance to get it. Okay, so John, which event do you think he scored the most points in?
Just thought of another event that you could. I'll say pole vault.
Michelle?
I've got the pole vault here.
Correct, you're both right! So he scored 1,051 points in the pole vault, And then he scored in his next highest scoring run was the hurdles.
Oh.
112. And then his next highest was the long jump.
Yeah, long jump I went down.
Those were the only three over 1,000. Okay. I think it was maybe javelin.
Yeah, javelin was next, I think.
And I was thinking discus as well, because that really...
He was just incredible. Oh. So that was on his way to his 9,126 world record. Okay. Amazing. Okay, so John, you have actually beaten Michelle technically, but
let's do the tiebreaker.
We can do the tiebreaker just to give Michelle a chance. Now, this is a kind of mental mathsy based athletics question.
You're not allowed to write down.
In fact, you can write down, but yeah.
Then it's not mental math.
Okay. Fine, Michelle. You can't write down, but John can.
Talk yourself out of it there.
Okay, there you both can write down in this non-mental maths question. Okay. So okay, so going back to Kevin Mayer, okay, what is Kevin Mayer's decathlon world record divided by Mirella Demireva's high jump personal best this year?
This year. Personal best, okay, right.
As in,
John, you're thinking
first. What is it?
So, what's as in, Kevin Mayer's total decathlon score?
In metres or centimetres?
Yeah, that's the thing. So, say if a high jump PB is 1.90 meters, are we dividing Mayer's world record by 190 or by
1.9?
Okay, right.
I thought you'd both be a bit faster. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, come on, it's hard.
Have you got it?
Hang on.
An answer.
Don't make me get the countdown theme tune now again.
Sorry, but my maths isn't very good. Yeah?
Okay, so, John, hit me with your answer.
Well, I reckon Demireva jumped bang on 2 metres this year.
You'd be correct in thinking so.
Well, at least
so, which would give 4.563.
No, it would not. Michelle?
I've got the same.
4.563.
That's what he scored on each day, isn't it? 9.126 divided by 2.
Do I get the thing out?
Oh, wait. Sorry. You were both right. I was reading the wrong answer.
You reading Tory Franklin's PB?
And on that note,
you're both winners. Except John actually won because he scored more points.
Oh, I just think it's an achievement I still know how to divide without using a calculator. Well, thank you to my maths teacher.
Okay, that is all we have time for on this week's podcast. But please subscribe, rate us 5 stars, and leave us comments. Let us know who you want us to interview and chat to and what you want us to chat about. But yeah, you can follow us on all social platforms. So that's at IWF Athletics on Instagram, IWF Org on Twitter, and the World Athletics Club on Facebook. Michelle, where can they find you on social media?
With my name, Michelle Summit.
Easy. Statman John, we've been saying it all.
With my name. Statman _ John.
And you can find me at Ben_BenHollow. There we go. I never even know my own handles. Anyway, right, that's it for this time, guys. Let me say bye.
Jessica is good night.
Jessica is good night. Good ending, right.